studio, and some of those were adapted to be played with full band. And a couple of pieces, which are more like very much heavily lean on video game composition and doing these sort of works for picture, those I would perform on my own to tracks that I've like pre-produced effectively. So the show will kind of be like cue to cue on scenes that some of them have fully completed backgrounds and then some like background tracks, and then some of the songs have no background track where it's just the band performing it with myself included. I play throughout the show.
Wow. And as for the visuals, are those already made, or will there be some improv in terms of how they appear?
So as much as I love improvised music and I work in improvised music a ton, and I will continue to for probably the rest of my life, this particular show has almost none. Everything is gritted out to a T. It's a like 50-minute show with starts and stops and starts and stops, and everything's pretty laid out to begin with, including the visuals, which I worked with an animation studio from the UK over the last 4 months to storyboard and sort of like bring that script into visual play. I'm actually still working on synchronizing the audio and sound effects.
I could imagine. And I asked you these questions with great curiosity, because I know you are an improviser, and as I think about the complexity of the story you want to tell, and the number of constraints, there's the story, there's you, there's the band, and then there's the animation. I was curious about how you would construct this in a way that's faithful to the story you want to tell. And it sounds like a lot of work, and maybe getting you into a little bit of a different area as an artist than you're accustomed to. Is that a fair statement? Because I know as an improviser, you're incredible. Here, you've really got to focus, right? Or not focus. Not focus isn't the right word, but you've got to build and finalize, I guess, is what I'm looking for.
Yeah. A lot of this was make decisions. There's a plenty. I 100% agree. There was so much of doing this project was diving into a whole new set of like artistic goals.
Yeah.
I wanted to be able to produce my own tracks. I wanted to be able to edit film and video and audio together. I wanted to be able to speak the language of the animators while we were talking through this kind of stuff. And yeah, it was a lot of things kind of like picked up over the last few years, with production, like audio production being the main thing that I probably spent the most time on. But at the same time, I still see myself as an amateur on almost everything besides like saxophone and improvisation and composition. So those are clearly the strengths that will be displayed during disassembly, with everything else kind of being like, this is what I've worked on and tried to get better at over the last few years. You will see my product because I have to show it, but at a certain level, I'm anxious that it doesn't quite showcase what I want it or what I dreamed it would be, because there is still a level of like I'm learning and I'm picking up these skills as I go. So it's not necessarily a work in progress so much as I am a work in progress and will continue to be a work in progress and hope to get better at these skills basically as I continue.
Well, I hope folks will check this out. It's called Disassembly. Disassembly. It is, there's only three shows, March 17th and March 18th at the New Hazlett Theater. We have a link to the New Hazlett for times and tickets. And it took me a while to wrap my head around the story, but it's finding identity in the midst of oppression told through music that synth pop, progressive rock, jazz, fusion, but also through these retro video game influenced animations. That sets the stage for what Feral Cat and the Wild will bring you on the 17th and 18th. Thank you. I know things are really busy given the amount of work you still have left. Anything else you wanted to mention about the show?
Just that I'm very excited for everyone to see it. There's some incredible stage design, some incredible lighting, really cool costumes. This show kind of has a little bit of everything, and I'm also a little bit sad that it'll only be three nights. I'm sure there'll be other opportunities to perform this work in the future.
Here's hoping for that. Thank you so much, and I hope to see you soon. Take care.
Thank you, Larry. Take it easy.
That's Feral Cat. The new Hazlett Theater is where you can find more information. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger and Chad Green. This is Larry Berger, Young Writers Live, coming up in our next hour. This is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. Saturday mornings at WRCT Pittsburgh, WIUPFM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, WNJR Washington, WCUC Clarion, PCTV Comcast 21, Verizon 47 Pittsburgh, WMCK.FM McKeesport, Radio Phoenix, .org Loudspeaker, .fm Fort Collins, Colorado, the Audio Now Network at area code 515-605-9542 and slbradio.org/radio. All month long, Women's History Month features. Here are women from Pittsburgh's legendary Aurora Reading Club.
I think Aurora is so special.
When you read some of what the women have been involved in, it's really fascinating.
These were women who formed this reading club who were like a little bit under, I guess, 30 years of slavery.
And the women that started this group had in mind that they wanted to lift as they climb. That meant that they had to share some of their own abilities, poetically and in the arts, and they wanted to also work with other people to bring them along.
These women, in a truly, almost spiritual way, lifted each other up. And you can feel that still when you come into the room, because these members still do that.
My mother-in-law had invited me to a number of meetings. At the time, I was fully employed, and when I was invited to become a member, I was hesitant to join because I knew that they always had meetings on Wednesday afternoons. But my husband encouraged me to join because he said it was a legacy, because several of his family members had been members prior to that. So I joined and would sometimes take the day off work to attend meetings.
I was invited by a member of my church. Her name was Ida Buchanan. And it was only later, after I'd been a member for a while, I was working with the archives, and I discovered that my great-grandmother and my grandmother had been members of the club.
I became affiliated because of Miss Margaret Burley. I've known Miss Burley since I was in third grade. She was actually my teacher.
I was invited to join the Aurora Reading Club by Thelma Morris, who is the great-great-niece of the founder, Rachel Lovett Jones.
Margaret and I joined the same year, so 22 years, and I'm a fourth generation, or what we call a legacy member. So my relatives who were co-founders with Mrs. Jones, and now here I am. We have had so many rich partnerships over the years.
We did a partnership with the Heinz History Center, and we worked on the Underground Railroad project.
We heard some stories from Pittsburgh Arts and Lectures. We've partnered with Carnegie Libraries. We've worked very closely, most especially with the Homewood Library and Denise Graham. We have partnered with Friday Club of Greensburg, LaRoche College.
We work with the Pittsburgh Public Schools. There are three of us that volunteer and read with the children once a week. And this is our fourth year doing this.
Well, I think some of my favorite moments are working together on different projects in the Aurora Club because we had so much fun together when we did the quilt and we had to do our squares and when we worked on the scrapbook. It was just amazing to get together and to help each other, give each other ideas, the companionship, and the working on projects.
I feel like I've just had the opportunity to learn so much, the ability to learn about not only who I am now, but who I can be. These women are willing to take you under their wing and help to influence you and to teach you about all that they know.
I'll tell you, when I leave the meetings, I feel like I've been to church. That's how outstanding the Aurora Reading Club is. We have concern for our members, and they know it. It shows.
It's just really important that we maintain the importance of reading and develop that in our children so that they continue to see the world and go places they might never have the opportunity to through the window of reading.
Thanks to Janessa Schuler for producing that piece. You can hear Women's History Month features every Saturday at 7 and 10 throughout March. And look for them also on social media at SLB Radio on Facebook and Instagram.
Traveling round and round from the great Northeast to Nashville down to Florida. We don't travel now for the winter and the snow. Scrape a little money together through Redneck Bar. Put all the wine on the credit card.
Did we make enough?
We can fill the car with unleaded gasoline. If you've had enough, or had near enough, you're sick and tired of that old man looking down on us. Come together, cause we think we've got a plan. Save a teeny tiny traveling folk band. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can. Mm-hmm. Save the songwriter, the snake charmer, iconoclast, a local farmer. Save a little for your sons and your daughters before it's all gone. God bless the ones who feel too much, talk too loud, too. Had enough break that stands between all of us. The void, the lie, the truth. And if you've had enough, or had near enough, you're sick and tired of that old man looking down on us. Come together, cause we think we've got a plan. Save a teeny tiny traveling folk band. Ain't it hard?
Ain't it hard?
Yes, it's hard to make a little money in this dang town. You know it. And it's hard.
And it's hard.
Yes, it's hard to make a little money in this dang town. When you're only a folk singer, a songwriter, a bartender, a freelance Uber driver, a waiter and a web designer. We're all beckers and dealers and backdoor barters, commonly referred to as Kickstarters. Have all your friends finally unfollowed you. If you've had enough, or had near enough, you're sick and tired of that old man looking down on us. Come together, the rough and tumble's got a plan. Come together, we can fool our Uncle Sam. Come together, there's no wish like this command. Save a teeny tiny traveling folk band. Yes, you can.
That is the Rough and Tumble. Man, they were great. We need to get them back. That was recorded live in our studios September 22nd, 2018. The Rough and Tumble, the name of the band. A couple quick reminders. we want to enjoy all this beautiful weather, so it's important that it stay light longer, right? Clocks go ahead 1 hour tonight as we spring forward into daylight saving time. And also here in southwestern Pennsylvania, it's probably the second largest St. Patrick's Day parade, maybe the third, depending on how you measure those statistics. But in any event, it's major. And if you're heading into the city of Pittsburgh, either to watch the parade or to do something else, you might notice traffic being a little different during the parade today. It's always a great day. And I hear that things happen after the parade, too, that people sometimes visit places and continue to play, so I'm told. So that'll be today. Next hour, the Pittsburgh Savoyards are going to be here live in our studios to do the selections from the Pirates of Penzance. Right now, it's a pleasure to have four teens in the studio, especially after a period of COVID where we did not have as many live students as before. We're going to have you meet each of them, learn a little bit more about them. The thing they all have in common is being honored as a Scholastic Writer Award winner in the Scholastic Writing Awards program. So we'll have you meet each of them. They're going to share some writing, and we'll talk a little bit afterwards, too. I'm going to ask you each to simply introduce yourself. Tell us where you go to school, how old are you, anything else you'd like to say, including any shout-outs. It's up to you, and it's okay if I start with you?
Yeah.
I hope.
My name is Olivia Mastron-Williams. I'm 14, and I go to Chartiers Valley Middle School. And a shout-out I want to make is, well, for two people. One is for my best friend, Morgan Chahalski, and the other is for my other best friend, Faith Coleman.
Excellent. And who brought you here today?
My mom.
Great. Is she out there somewhere?
Yes. She's the lady waving.
Yes, I see her out there. Great. What else do you like to do? And I gather you like to write, but do you have other things you enjoy?
I like to collect rocks. I have a really big collection at home. And I also like to play instruments. I play three. I play the viola, the trombone, and the bass guitar.
Wow. When did you start collecting rocks?
I think like 2 years ago. And it's just kind of developed over a few years.
Have you thought about geology as a career?
No.
That's my wife is a geologist. She gave you a big thumbs up. You might not have seen it. When we got married, I got her rock collection, and it's a lot. Rocks are really something to look at, and that's quite a range of instruments.
Yeah.
French horn is hard, isn't it?
No, trombone.
Oh, trombone. I'm sorry. Trombone, bass guitar.
And viola.
How did I get French horn out of that? Oh, that's right. You mentioned that earlier. I broke one of my own rules. I'll tell you that in a minute. But that's still a lot of instruments.
Yeah.
Let's turn to the person who is sitting on your left. Hello.
Hi, my name is Lily Larkin. I'm a freshman at North Hills High School. I'm 15. Some shout-outs. I want to shout out my family in New Jersey listening to me right now. And also my boyfriend, Luca. Hi.
Hi, Luca. And tell me about your family. What are who are they?
There's a lot of them. But they're just like my aunts and uncles and my cousins. And it's nice to them to be able to listen to this because of COVID. We haven't really been able to see them as much. So it's cool that they get to, like, hear me. So.
Oh, that's great. When I said I broke my own rule is you typically shouldn't talk to people too much before it's time for them to join you on the air, because sometimes you'll ask things and you'll forget whether you asked it on the radio or not. And you mentioned French horn, and that stuck in my head. Is that a hard instrument to play?
Yeah, it's pretty difficult, but once you get the hang of it, it's not that bad.
I can just remember from when I was in band and orchestra, it was hard to find French horn players.
Yeah.
People didn't want to do it. Well, welcome. And do you have other things you like to do?
Yeah, I play soccer and I run track.
Excellent. What do you run in particular? Do you prefer the short types of races, or do you longer things?
I'm planning this year on running the 800 meter, the mile, and hurdles, 100 meter hurdles.
Wow, excellent. Well, it's nice to meet you. And let's meet Caden next, who's sitting next to you.
Hi, great to be here. My name's Caden Velasquez. I am a junior at North Allegheny Senior High School. I'm 17. And I'd like to give a shout out to a family in Michigan who may or may not be listening right now, and my parents who are out in the lobby. I can't see them right now, but I'll turn around.
Yes, we designed the studio so your back would be. Isn't that nice? You don't have to worry. What else do you like to do?
I'm a football player. I also do track and field as well.
And you're right.
Yes.
So you're breaking all the stereotypes. You know, you can do all of those things. Well, it's nice to have you here. I forgot to ask you if you had family members here that you wanted to say hello to or acknowledge.
Yeah, my mom. She's out there looking at me.
Well, it's nice to see her. And then we have one more student here with us.
Hi, I'm Maya Sivakumar. I'm 16. I'm also a junior at North Allegheny Senior High School. And I'd like to shout out my parents and my little sister and my friend Abby, who's currently listening in like Chichester right now. So shout out to her. And some other things I like to do besides write, I do Indian classical dance, so that's fun. And I'm also in my school's marching band. I also play trombone.
Oh, look at that. I love marching band. You must... Have you ever done a parade like the St. Patrick's Day parade?
We've done a few parades. Like, our season ends in, like, the winterish, kind of, as soon as the football season ends. So I think we've done, like, Labor Day parades and things like that. So it's always really fun.
And who brought you here today?
My dad, but he actually had to shovel our driveway so that he could get down here. So he just, like, as soon as he finished, he drove me here. So he's really sweaty and he's waiting in the car. But I definitely appreciate him, like, being here, even though he's not, like, right in the studio right now.
Well, I do, too. We were concerned about all of you making it here, given the weather, and I'm glad you did. Before you share your pieces, does anybody have any thoughts about why creative writing or just writing is... why you enjoy doing it or why you think it's a good thing to do? Go ahead.
Well, I just think it's a really good outlet. And we do so much, like, essay writing and, like, technical writing in school. So it's kind of a good way to get out that creative aspect without it being so, like, formulaic. Like, you can kind of just do whatever and let yourself go and just be creative, and it's just really nice, especially because now we all wrote and we all have, like, there was a payoff because we all won an award, and it's just nice to see that creative aspect of your life be so rewarding.
Any other thoughts?
I can go. I mean, I think I mostly write to, like, give other people a new perspective. I think that's really important. I try to read, like, new books that give me new perspectives on the world, and I think it's such, like, an interesting concept that you can use, like, your power and your voice to be able to, like, create these new stories that help people learn about the world and learn about not just who you are, but, like, who other people are. It's a way of living, like, a lot of different lives in just, like, one.
That's a really good way of putting it, and trying on different lives, too, and experimenting. Other thoughts at all, Caden?
The reason I wrote was just because it's a good way to find yourself within your own writing, because you don't really know what you're going to write when you open up the document or you open your journal. You just kind of put your pencil in your hand or get your fingers on the keyboard and you just start going, and you find yourself along the way finding new things to discover about who you really are.
I wish you could see all the heads nodding as you're listening right now. Caden can, but as you're listening at home, a lot of heads sort of bobbing up and down. That's one of the first things I noticed, too, is that you may set out to write something, but you end up writing something completely different than what you were thinking. Anything you'd like to add?
Personally, for me, I write just to get my ideas out there because I've so many, and then they just end up building up. So what I do is I take out all of my, like, creative buildup on my writing, and I think... Oh, I just lost my train of thought, sorry.
No, that makes... I understand what you're saying is, though, you might lose those thoughts if you don't write them down, or maybe you have to make room for additional thoughts by kind of purging yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Of them. Great. Well, who would like to share what they wrote first? Does anybody care, Caden? You want to get
first.
Us started? And if there's anything you need to set it up, please feel free to. And the floor is yours. I'm going to fade this music away because I'd like you to stand alone. So whenever you're ready, go ahead.
My poem is called Out of Nothing, written by yours truly. Everything we see is nothing. We have made our lives from the concept of something. In the beginning, it was all just black. But once it began, there was no turning back. Lights shine and the stars had burned, almost as if they need to be earned. They burn and burn and fly through the sky. They burn until they eventually die. The corpses are cold and they shine so dim. The stars have all died. The sight is so grim. They begin to move on, the corpses pass by, but from them emerges new sparks that fly. They burn so bright, better than before, and they keep going, wanting to burn more. These stars do not know where they come from or go. They move on with their lives, going to and fro. This poem is about stars and the light that they leave, and how when they're gone, they give us the seed. The seed to keep going, the seed to live on. The seed to make sure we can see the next dawn. These stars create life, but it's so hard to see that this isn't about stars, it's about you and me. The lives that we live, they leave impressions on all. So don't take for granted the stars that will fall. We have come from nothing and return just the same. Life is a wonder, it's not always a pain.
Wow. I liked that a lot. Did you draft and redraft and redraft, or did that come to you pretty clearly the first time?
That all came out at once.
Wow. Anybody else have any comments or thoughts about it?
Yeah, I think it was, like, really good. It was a really good, like, I don't know, almost like metaphor of the stars, and, like, I mean, obviously that was the point, but it just translated really well, and, like, I picked up on what you were meaning, so it was really good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I loved the rhyme scheme. I think a lot of poets these days, at least most of the poets I know, kind of focus on writing something free verse, and oftentimes I really don't understand the point they're trying to get across, but I think having, like, a rhyme scheme and kind of, like, that basic structure really makes it, like, that much more profound and even, like, catchier.
Yeah, I caught that too, and it wasn't sing-songy at all either. It just was there to kind of occasionally, not that you needed this, but it's like, I'm a poem, you know, it reminded you of the structure. Any other thoughts before our next reading? Okay, who would like to, that was Caden, who wants to go next?
I can go.
Okay, here we go, and whenever you're ready.
Okay, so I just thought I'd set this up since I'm just reading an excerpt, but it's from, like, one of the stories I submitted. So it's about, like, this mother and a daughter, and it's kind of like a magical realism piece. So it's basically in this moment where this mother is kind of, like, trapped in this kind of magical, colorful rain, and she suddenly sees her daughter, who she feels like has been kind of pulling away from her. So I race back to my car, and my hair comes undone, now colored in the rainbow rain. I run from the hood onto the roof of the car, which was conveniently ice cold. I reach up with both of my hands, and the rain puddles in the cup of my palms. When I look into the water, I see dashed dreams and mistakes. I see regrets and wrongdoings. I see so much that I should have felt, but instead chose to ignore. The pain and suffering hits my stomach, and it is decades worth of electric pain bursting free. I fall to my knees in beautiful sobs. They are cries born from wounds, unhealed and unknown. All the while, the colors of the rain bury me in nostalgia. From behind me, I hear a familiar whisper. I turn my head, and in the rain, among the cars, stands my daughter, somehow dry as ever. Her name locks in my throat. She begins to walk towards me, and as she does, the rain stands still. Drops suspend in midair, and she speaks with sharp words. "Behind the wheel, Mama." I shake my head at her, wondering so many questions, and she repeats the words again. "Go behind the wheel." Like a drowning man reaching for a scrap of wood, I slide from the car's roof and try to meet her halfway. The further I run to meet her, the farther away she seems to be. Again, she repeats the words, "Behind the wheel." Then I know. I turn my back towards her and make steps towards my car. I look back, and she still stands there, noticeable from miles away by the yellow streak in her hair. Closing my eyes, I heave a deep breath and open the car door. My soaking dress floods the leather seats with water. I close the door next to me. A shock goes up my spine, and with the blink of my eyes, the world continues. The sky is clear, and my dress is dry. I hear the sounds of honking cars from behind me and realize that I should have started driving a long time ago. I slam the gas pedal, and the radio sounds continue to lull me with the news. I pretend it was all a dream, because I am needed behind the wheel. I belong there.
Wow. Wow, that's tell me about the process for you writing this.
Okay, to be honest, I submitted two different stories. One of them I had worked on for a while, and this one I wrote specifically for the competition a day before the deadline.
Wow.
So that's actually, I just like, the idea had been in my head for a long time, so I just like put down my first draft and sent it in immediately. So that's where this all came from.
And you mentioned, excuse me, magical realism. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up with like a lot of fantasy books. I'm still into like reading fantasy, but I kind of just wanted to see that like shift or like that combination of looking at real life through a magical lens and kind of using that lens to see things more clearly. If that's kind of like, it's kind of hypocritical, but I think that adding that element really like allows you to use different kind of symbolism, and like it adds a lot of value and kind of like, not even just value, it adds a lot of like interesting aspects to the story that might have not been there if it was just like a regular fiction.
How did you learn about that term? I know it's considered a classification of certain types of literature. Yeah. I did not learn about it until I was an adult.
Yeah, to be honest, I haven't really read a lot of magical realism, but there's like this one TV show, Jane the Virgin, and it's kind of like entirely centered around magical realism, and she reads a lot of like magical realism books, and that was kind of where I got the idea.
Well, thanks, Maya. Any comments any of you have, Caden?
I really like the descriptive detail that you put into the story, and just the act of going on top of a car and just kneeling down, feeling the rain drip down your back. I mean, who hasn't wanted to do that in their life? And just feeling all the emotions that go through your character, it just seems like real.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. The descriptions really helped it, like, because even though there is that magical aspect, it did make it seem a lot more like real, and like I could totally picture it, and I think it just really helped add to like what you were going for.
I really like how strong your emotions were. Like, you were very clear about what this mother was feeling, and that really grabbed my attention. I think I'd enjoy like this whole story.
Thank you.
If you're just joining us, you're hearing four Scholastic Writing Awards regional winners. We'll have more in the weeks to come, too. We still have two more you're going to hear from. You've heard Caden from North Allegheny, and Maya also from North Allegheny. What's roughly the size of the graduating class this year? Is it 1,000 plus?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
It's a big school. Who wants to go next? Okay. So what piece did you bring? We're going to hear from Lily.
So I brought a poem. I submitted a poem and a short story, but I brought the poem, and it's about my uncle, because he definitely had a big impact on, like, my, like, life, and he passed away in the summer of 2019, and I was just thinking about it one time, and I just kind of felt, like, inspired to write it, because I was just feeling so, like, just kind of remembering all, like, the times that we had and, like, the feelings. So, okay, so my poem is called Half Full. Your house smelled like bologna and cigarettes. On long, cold nights, it stood welcoming, a safe haven away from the sea of the turnpike. It was always somehow half empty, yet half full of laughter and conversation and bits filled in after the fact, full of memories that no one else had except us. But it was empty. It was a lonely house. Lonely until we came, and lonely in the early mornings after you'd gone, and only Dad's snores caroled amid silence. Still, it felt like home, and was so easy to settle into. It was less easy to settle into the hospital room. Five people inside at once closing in, and unlike your house, it was cramped. You were yellow. The sad window saw only another room across the courtyard with the dead grass and the withering oak tree, and in that room, with the same four walls, laid another yellow person. At some point, the room was too cramped for all those people, so you left. I wonder if it was better than a closet with an urn inside that is only half full.
Boy.
What a tribute.
You must really love him.
Yeah.
Can I ask, what did you call him?
Uncle John.
And it's only been a couple of years. You really captured a person. I feel like I know him a bit based on how you wrote it. And I love the beginning, the bologna and the cigarettes, and I see you smiling. Is that kind of how, was he married?
No, yeah, he lived alone in this house on the Chesapeake Bay, and it was just kind of like, when I think of, like, when I see bologna or when I see a cigarette, like, I think of him because that's just how he was. Like, he always had bologna in the fridge, always had a cigarette in his hand, like, and that's why I included it, because those are pretty much two of the things that really make, like, remind me of him.
Yeah, you drew a picture of him from the very first words, and the picture I got was, like, bachelor lives, kind of a confirmed bachelor, as they would say. You also had some imagery there about the turnpike being away from the Sea of the Turnpike is how you put it, and I liked the way that came out. Does anybody else, I didn't mean to steal the stage, anybody else have any comments to share?
I really like just how you pulled the reader in right just from the first lines, like the house always smelled of bologna and cigarettes. You can kind of really get into the setting of this poem, and you start to know who you're trying to describe. And the half full, half empty really shows like how people can be when you're with them or without them, and how everyone has two sides to them. I thought that was really nice.
Thank you.
I really admired how like you were able to capture like the joy of his life, also like the grief of his passing, and I thought that was something so powerful. Like I can tell that you put like at least like a lot of emotion into this, and I think that's really beautiful.
Thank you.
The urn symbolism, well, more than symbolism, the reality, gosh, what a way. You know, death represents endings and beginnings to some extent, and the way you included that at the end and continued the full empty metaphor, not to just be so direct about it, but it really, really was a great way to finish.
Thank you.
You know, nobody could see that coming, and, you know, it's amazing, right? It's such a strong beginning and ending, and all of it is great, but those are really powerful ways to start and end.
Thank you.
We have one more writer that's going to share with us, and she is Olivia. And what do you have?
I have a story that I wrote actually when I was in seventh grade for a school writing competition, but I never submitted it, and it's called Dead Man's Desert. It was a quiet night in the desert, the kind of quiet where you can hear worms digging their way through the ground, the kind of quiet where not even crickets dared to sing their croaky tune, the kind of quiet where if you focused hard enough, you could hear a car on the highway in the next state over. It was a little too quiet in the desert. In a valley sat a beat-up white van. On the roof sat two women and a baseball bat. One woman looked out to the horizon, keeping watch for signs of trouble. The other woman was listening for any noises. The only light that could be seen was the first woman's cigarette. On the top of the valley, footsteps could be heard. The lady on lookout motioned to her companion to get into the van and to grab the bat. The two quietly slipped inside the van and waited. In the morning, one of the women went out to check the damage. There were bloody handprints on the back of the van. "Do you see anything out there, Mauve?" asked the woman in the van. Without looking away from the prints, Mauve shouted back, "Yes, ma'am. We got marked, which means that the creep who tagged us will be coming back with some friends." "Don't you play with me," the other woman said. "I'm not playing, Val. You can come on out and see for yourself if you'd like." Val stepped out of the van and moved quickly to where Mauve was standing. Sure enough, there were handprints, just as promised. "See," Mauve said sarcastically. "This is bad. What are we going to do?" Val's voice trembled a little as she spoke. "I'll tell you what we're going to do," Mauve replied. "First, you're going to get me my spray paint to cover up these prints. Then we're going to go get some supplies." Even though there were very few zombies out during the day, driving through the desert was still dangerous. But if you were to take the same path 2 years ago, the only thing you would have to look for were coyotes. That was before the whole world got hit with a virus that made people grotesque and hungry for flesh. There were survivors, people who were immune, but they still died, either by getting eaten or by self-infliction. As far as they knew, Mauve and Val were the only women left alive on Earth, but it didn't matter to them. All they needed was each other, the van they stole from a car dealership, and their weapons, a zombie-proof bat and a hatchet. Together, the two ruled the whole state of Texas, killing zombies and staying alive. The van pulled up to an abandoned weapons store. The two women got out of the van and made their way inside, their own weapons in hand. Once inside, they split up, Mauve heading for the explosions and Val standing guard. Mauve was determined to make the trip quick, grabbing the first box full of dynamite and the button detonator she saw. She was just about to leave when a noise came back from the back of the store. It was loud and visceral, like an animal of some kind. Val must have heard it too, because she rushed over to the other. "What was that?" she asked. "I'm not sure," Mauve replied, "but I'm going to find out." She put down the dynamite, slung her bat over her shoulder, and made her way to the back. She got to the end of the aisle and peeked around it. There, right by the gun counter, a zombified man walked around in circles. His skin was gray and veiny, his shirt tattered, and blood splattered all over his front. Mauve gasped when she saw him, and he must have heard it, because he started walking towards her hiding spot. From the farther side of the aisle, Mauve could smell the man's rotting flesh getting closer. She knew she had to help, or else Mauve could get hurt or killed. She made her way around the store to the gun counter, grabbing a weapon off the rack. She crouched next to the counter, waiting for the right moment. The man was right next to the aisle where Mauve was standing. He turned and looked down at her, but he didn't get the chance to grab her. In a matter of 2 seconds, Mav stood up and smashed the man square in the face with her bat. He turned around and let out a shriek in pain, giving Mav the chance to escape. She saw Val crouched by the counter and shot her a glance. Val nodded back. Zombie recovered from Mav's powerful swing and turned to face the two, visibly angry. He rushed for Mav, arms outstretched, but before he could grab her, she jumped out of the way, cracking him in the back of the head. He stumbled forward, and Val stood up and aimed her weapon. She pulled the trigger, hitting the zombie straight through his skull. He stood there for 5 seconds, and then fell backwards, dead. Val put down the weapon and vomited. Mav went and got the dynamite. Together, they walked out of the store, got in the van, and drove back towards the desert. The desert night was quiet. Mav and Val sat on a ridge on a wall in the valley, their van below stocked full of dynamite. The detonator sat between the two, ready to cause destruction. Mav was smoking again, and Val was keeping her eyes out for the horrid horde of zombies that was coming. They waited there for hours when the ground started to shake and shrieks sounded in the distance. They braced themselves. Hundreds of zombies poured into the desert, shrieking and stinking, beelining for the van. They swarmed the vehicle, pounding on the windows and doors, breaking the windshield and climbing on the roof. Their shrieks grew louder as they found that the van was empty. Val looked over at Mav as if asking if they should set up the dynamite. Mav looked back and nodded at her, giving the go-ahead. Together, they raised their hands and pushed the button on the detonator. The van blew up in a giant blast, sending out a wave of heat and taking out the horde below. The sky lit up and the sound was deafening. Parts began to rain from the sky, and from the safety of their ridge, Mav and Val sat with their fingers intertwined, watching the sweet destruction rain down in Dead Man's Desert.
Wow. You read that really well, all live, too, which is not easy to do.
Thank you.
And you began the story with exceptional quiet for the listener and reader and ended with the loudest noise in the world and everything that happened in between. Anybody have any feedback or comments?
I was not expecting it to be a zombie apocalypse story. Like, I just started listening to that, and I was like, oh, this sounds really nice and, like, quaint, and then it just exploded around me, and I don't know if you could tell, my eyes were, like, wide open. I was, like, not expecting anything that was happening. So I think, like, I just really liked that. And also, I enjoyed your blocking, so, like, how you, like, wrote all these different characters fighting. I always struggle with blocking, even if it's just two characters sitting on, like, a bus together. I can never do it. So I think you did really well with that, too.
Thank you.
Yeah, I kind of liked at the end how it kind of all came together, and it was like, I mean, it wasn't like super drawn out, but you still had a little bit of suspense, like, oh, what's going to happen? Are they going to get eaten or whatever? And like, I don't usually read like zombie stories, but it was definitely really interesting, and I really liked the way that you wrote it because it just conveyed a really good story.
Thank you.
I like how you built this world from the reader's perspective, like, when you first go into the story, you have no idea what's going on. You just see two women on top of a van in the desert. And then you just drop the bomb. There's a zombie apocalypse. And everyone's thrown off just by surprise. You gradually build this world up, introducing zombies and hordes. And I would love to see where this would go.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that's one of my reactions was, what else is going on inside of your head? Because I just didn't expect, like Maya said, I did not expect the zombie world at all to come out of that. You guys are all great. There's one more question I'm curious about, but does anybody want to say anything that you didn't get room to say or I didn't give you time to say? Just want to be sure.
No,
I think.
Yeah.
Excellent. I'm curious, and you might not have an answer for this question, but a lot of people wonder about how the pandemic has affected folks like you. And people, I think, you know, we know about gaps in school or learning loss or dreams deferred in some cases. I'm curious if there's something that you wish people understood about the pandemic that nobody talks about with respect to your own life. And I please don't reveal anything if it seems too personal, but I'm just curious if there's anything that you think people would be surprised to hear about or that nobody ever talks about. Does anything come to mind?
Well, I feel like while it was awful and there was just so much going on, it was also a really good opportunity for some resets in your life and ways to kind of like see what you really care about and what you really want to do, because for me it was definitely an opportunity. I could write more, I could do more things, like, and school's pretty much normal again, so like we're kind of going back to that, but it was nice having like that reset time because I could really reassess like my priorities and just kind of like what I wanted to go on in my life.
That's a really great observation, and I've never heard anybody say that. Anybody else, Maya?
Yeah, I definitely think I had a lot more time to write, and I think I really valued the extra time I got, especially during my sophomore year, because we were on a hybrid schedule for school, so half of the week I would be like staying at home and half I would be at school. And it gave me, I remember every single time after my online school finished, I would have tons of time to write, because even though I did have assignments to do, there, I don't have to worry about like travel time or just like the exhaustion that comes with physically being at school. So I actually kind of rediscovered my like skill for writing, and I wrote probably like at least like 1,000 words a day. It was insane. And I really enjoyed like that kind of period of time to just reassess myself and think about my priorities.
Caden?
I thought the pandemic was great for people who are creatively inclined, because you're stuck inside all day, nothing to do. TV shows weren't progressively being made, and so you had this creative outlet that was just stuck inside of you that you just had to get out. And people who decided to make stories during the pandemic, share what they had to write during the pandemic, helped other people realize this is a great time for me to do my own thing, let my own stories out into the world. And I just thought it would be really good to do that for myself, because I wrote my poem during the middle of the pandemic, because my little brother, his name's Jason, he loves space. He adores it, and we talk about it. He has a binder, and I printed out a black hole cover for him for his binder, and he kind of helped me to write this poem, just the inspiration for it.
That's great. Jason gave you a big thumbs up. I assume that's him out there. Yes.
Yep, I see him. Hi, Jace.
And let me turn to Olivia. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
I think that the pandemic affected everyone creatively, not just writers, but like anybody. I know a lot of people have taken up like sort of crafts or like other hobbies. People have taken up like building or like renovations and stuff. And I think that because, you know, everyone was kind of like in their homes, they didn't really have a lot of stress from like outside life, so they could really like focus in on like what they wanted to do creatively.
Each of you had something so positive to say about an outcome or an impact that I think other people may not have recognized as they listened. So I want to thank you all, Maya, Olivia, Caden, Lily. I hope we'll see you again here. And thanks for being part of things. Congratulations on your award.
Thank
as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, now we're going to play you a bit of a feature. Wasn't that great, by the way? We're going to go from youth writing to youth music. The Sunbird School of Music brought a number of students here back in July of 2017. And we'll take a listen to a portion of their appearance from that time here at the Saturday Light Brigade. A group of musicians out with us getting set up right now. You'll get a chance to hear from them all and to hear their voices, too, as we talk to them. They range in age from 11 to 16 and have come with a variety of instruments, and I can't wait for you to hear them. They are the Sunburst School of Music House Band.
Sometimes I go out by myself and I look across the water and I think of all the things what you're doing, and in my head I paint a picture, 'cause since I come on home, well, my body's been a mess and I miss your
Valerie.
okay to clap. There are all of these parents and brothers and sisters and friends just sort of quietly sitting at the end of that song. So where's Jonathan? I wanted to catch him. And Jonathan Golden, you've worked with these kids. Tell us a little bit about them.
Well, this is our house band. They're sort of the ambassadors of Sunburst. We recently put this group together. How long have you guys been a group now? Only a couple months. This is sort of the newest project, but these are some of our most veteran students. So we're happy to have them perform for you here today.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad that we have them here. What a big group. It's amazing. Let's meet everybody that's here. They, I think, have one more song after this one. Just to sort of put you, give you some perspective, as you listen on the radio, there were three singers primarily on that last song, a couple people playing keys, and then we had an electric guitarist, acoustic guitar player, percussion, and bass. Did I miss anybody? I think I got everybody. Let's meet the singers. First of all, I'll ask you if you could give us your name and where you go to school, where you live, and if you have any shout-outs, this would be a great time to give them.
Shout-outs? Hey, I'm Riley. I go to SciTech. I live in Squirrel Hill. Shout-out to Mikey, because I want to give Mikey a shout-out. Mikey's another teacher at Sunburst, and I like Mikey.
Mikey Myers?
That's the one, yeah.
I know.
Not Shrek. The other guy.
See, I know Mikey. Mikey's a good guy. He needs to be more positive, don't you think? No, Mikey's a positive guy. And how about you?
My name is Sloan Simon. I live in Fox Chapel, and I go to Shadyside Academy. A shout-out to my wonderful mother. That's about it.
Well, that's good. Shout-outs are optional, too. Don't worry if you can't come up with anybody, although mother's a good choice. How about you? What's your name?
I'm Madeline King. I also live in Squirrel Hill, like Riley, and I go to Alderdice.
Nice to meet you. Anybody to say hello to?
I want to give a shout-out to Chloe. She's our main instructor, but she couldn't be here today.
So I learned something about your school today. Billy Eckstein was a great jazz vocalist born in Pittsburgh. He went to Peabody High School. His sister taught at Taylor Alderdice for many years. Billy Eckstein is a world-renowned. He passed away in the 90s, but is a world-renowned jazz musician, of which there are many from Pittsburgh. But his sister taught Spanish at Taylor Alderdice, which I never knew. Now we have our percussionist. Hello, what's your name?
I'm Oliver Hufford. I live in Squirrel Hill, and I go to Falk.
Nice to meet you. Anybody to say hello to?
My sister and my brother.
And so what are their names?
Alex and Ian.
And how old are you?
I'm 11.
And I think you are the youngest, am I right? That was often me. How has it been playing with these guys?
It's been a lot of fun. Every Sunday, I come down to Sunburst, and I have a great time.
Excellent. Now we have the acoustic guitarist with a Martin on his knee. What's your name?
I'm Sean Whitney. I go to Alderdice, live in Squirrel Hill. And shout out to my parents, who I'm staring at right now.
They got the early award. I think they were here early. And I liked them because they were watching radio. We like people that watch radio sitting there. Nice to meet you. And I almost missed the bass player who's... oh, wait a minute. No. The bass player. I did miss the bass player, but we have the electric guitarist. I saw the instrument behind you, which is what threw me. What's your name?
I'm Mason Miller. I live in Regent Square. I go to Winchester.
Nice to meet you. Anybody to say hello to?
Barb and Ringo.
Excellent. And now I'm going to get the bass player, and then you'll meet the two keyboardists. What's your name?
My name is Shane Craner. I go to Pittsburgh Science and Technology Academy in Oakland, and I live in Squirrel Hill. I'd like to give a shout out to all you budding bassists out there. don't let the radio dude forget you.
There you go. I would never forget you. You can just call me Larry, but radio dude's kind of nice. I've been called that before. Do you think bassists are overlooked?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. You probably are right, because, you know, when the bass player is doing his job, sometimes nobody notices. When the bass player is not doing his or her job, everybody notices, right?
Yeah, yeah. You got to have the bass player, but nobody really notices you there.
Yeah, well, we're noticing you, and thank you for being here. And let's meet you. What's your name?
My name is Zach Willen. I live in Squirrel Hill, and I go to St. Edmund's. And I want to give a shout out to my family. One of them is here.
Who's that?
That's my dad.
Yeah, I know your dad. I was surprised to see him here, too. It's great that he's here. Tell me about the instrument. Yours is the one instrument that some people might not be able to visualize. It's a keyboard, but you're wearing it like a guitar.
It's a guitar. It's like you hold it like a guitar, but it's a piano. It has keys and stuff.
Do you play piano as well?
Yeah.
It's got to be fun to play that. You see, who plays guitar? There are a number of it. Do you know any guitar players that we would know, like famous names?
The guy in Van Halen. I really don't know his name.
There are a lot of guys doing that. Finally, we have the person playing the traditional horizontal piano. What's your name?
Hello, my name is Jacob Allen. I live in Squirrel Hill and go to Alderdice. Shout out to my parents.
Excellent. Well, it's really nice to have all of you here. And if you're just joining us, this is the band from the Sunburst School of Music, which is located in Squirrel Hill. And I think these guys have one more song. And let me turn back to Jonathan just to ask you what they opened up with and what they're about to play.
So the first song that they played was Valerie by Amy Winehouse, and the next song that they're going to close with is called Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba.
Thank you for being here, all of you. You sound great, and I know there was a lot of time to set up and get ready, too. So here, once again, the Ambassadors, the house band of Sunburst School of Music.
We'll be singing when we're winning. We'll be singing. I get knocked down, but I get up again. No, you're never gonna keep me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. No, you're never gonna keep me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. No, you're never gonna keep me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. No, you're never gonna keep me down.
He drinks a whiskey drink, he drinks a vodka drink, he drinks a lager drink, he drinks a cider drink. He sings the songs that remind him of the good times, he sings the songs that remind him of the better times.
Oh, Donny boy, Donny boy, Donny boy.
I get knocked down, but I get up again. No one ever gonna keep me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. No one ever gonna keep me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. No, you're never gonna keep me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. No, you're never gonna keep me down. He drinks a whiskey drink, he drinks a vodka drink, he drinks a lager drink, he drinks a cider drink. He sings the songs that remind him of the good times, he sings the songs that remind him of the better times.
Don't cry for me, next door neighbor.
I get knocked down, but I get up again. No, you're never gonna keep me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. No, you're never gonna keep me down. I get knocked down. Will I get up again? No, oh, you're never gonna keep me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. No, you're never gonna keep me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. No, you're never gonna keep me down.